Okay, the recording has started, so everybody be polite when you speak. This is Mark Schenker. This is the clinical podcast or clinical conference call, depending on how long you've been listening, for the Society of Addiction Psychology, which hopefully many of you are members of. And if not, you ought to think about joining. Okay, that's the commercial. A couple of ground rules. Again, if you're going to discuss any case material, please be wary that this is being recorded and protect the confidentiality. Everyone, please, this is the most important thing. Please press your mute button so we don't get all sorts of background noise. Future calls. Hello? Okay.
Hi. Sarah Church joining.
Oh, hi. We had a change of speaker for September. The speaker couldn't make it, so we have an opening if anybody wants to present something or do a case study. We were talking about possibly doing a case study. Please get in touch with me. I've got a couple of people on the wing, so I don't think we'll have a blank. Well, there is no call in August because hopefully everybody's going to APA. And with no further ado, I'm going to introduce our speaker, who is Nicole Kosanke. She's a clinical psychologist, and she's the director of family services at the Center for Motivation and Change in New York City. She works with family members of people abusing substance, and she also works in the assessment program for families and individuals. She's been very involved in the development and practice of CRAFT, C-R-A-F-T, the Community Reinforcement and Family Therapy, and Family Training, I'm sorry. She uses MI, CBT, and she's the co-author of a wonderful book called Beyond Addiction, How Science and Kindness Help People Change, which is a very positive and optimistic book, which I've often referred patients to. She also contributed to the 20-Minute Guide, a guide for parents about how to help their child change their substance use. And I'm going to turn the call over to Dr. Kosanke, and you may want to set down whatever guidelines you have for the call. So take it away.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I am really happy to be here and talk about CRAFT. I'll just make one amendment to your introduction. Thank you for that, which is that I had no part in developing CRAFT. The Community Reinforcement and Family Training approach was developed by Bob Myers, and his website, I think, is drrobertmyers.com, drrobertmyers.com, and he does trainings all over the country and actually all over the world. I think he's single-handedly trained up a couple European nations, but he is the founder, and I'll go through some of the resources in terms of books as a clinician and books as a patient to be aware of in terms if you wanted to learn more and read up more or have resources to give your clients. So thanks for that intro. So hopefully you guys have the PowerPoint in front of you about the talk today, but I'm going to follow that. And I mean, I don't think I need to tell you guys the prevalence of the problem of substance use disorders, but it's a problem, and we generally are speaking with substance use disorders about the young people or the adults who have the problem themselves. But this talk is really going to be about the collateral damage, the folks that are loving someone with a substance use problem, and they get negatively affected in ways that I think everyone is pretty aware of, but there isn't a lot of clinical attention to these folks and not as much attention to the ways in which they might be helpful in terms of impacting someone's substance use in the relationship. So that's really what CRAFT is about that we'll be talking about today. But the impact, the negative impact on concerned significant others is pretty tragic. And people tend to be pretty isolated in addition to having all sorts of negative emotional consequences for themselves and symptomology. They're also quite isolated and don't have a lot of treatment options for themselves. That is what we're addressing here with CRAFT. So just to get some abbreviations out of the way, like I refer to the family member or the concerned significant other as the CSO, and the person with the substance use problem as the IP. And when we're talking about engagement, one of the goals of CRAFT is getting the IP engaged in treatment. We're really talking about entering treatment not just to get an assessment, but it's defined as three sessions past that assessment. So when we look at the data around this, which we'll do a little briefly, that's what we mean by engagement. So what is CRAFT? CRAFT is a really effective research-based approach that very few clinicians and certainly CSOs know about. But it has a lot of strong research base and support, and it's unique in the sense that it's working with the family members themselves, the CSOs, not with the IPs. So when you're doing CRAFT, if you get trained in it and use these strategies, you're working with the family member, not with the IP. So the IP is not even in the room. I frequently work with parents together, so two people might be in the room, or even more than that, I've worked with siblings, a number of siblings coming together to learn the strategies, but the IP is not there. When they did the research on this, they really didn't let people into the studies unless the IP was specifically refusing to get treatment. So just thinking about like what are the traditional approaches for CSOs, I think we're all familiar with the Anon programs that many people are aware of, and that there's a lot of availability around that in terms of Al-Anon or Nar-Anon. There's also the intervention approach, which is popularized by television shows and has been around for a long time. And it's the classic intervention is the Johnson Institute intervention. There's some variations that are more available now. But that's kind of the classic approach is Johnson intervention. And then the other approach that people might be referred to is to get their own therapy, right, mental health counseling just for the CSO themselves. So if we look at what these options are for CSOs, the first one being the 12-step programs, it really does offer a lot of support for CSOs. It decreases their isolation, makes them feel not so alone and singled out in the problems that they're facing. It really helps them to focus on their own self-care, decrease their enabling behaviors, focus on how they're taking care of themselves and their boundaries. And the key premise here is that the CSO is not going to influence change on the IP's part, and so they really do need to focus on their own self-care. And this detach with love idea is really kind of a focus in these meetings in terms of detaching from behaviors, not necessarily the person or the relationship, but detaching from behaviors. And so that's a, kind of a theme of the Anon programs. And there's a lot of them, and it's really valuable for that reason because there's a lot of available meetings. So when we look at comparing what's different about CRAFT and what's different about the premise of CRAFT versus the Anon programs, really the most important thing is, in terms of differences, is that from a craft perspective, the CSOs can have a positive impact and can influence change on the IP's part. They're not in charge. It's not their responsibility. They shouldn't be made to feel like they it's their fault or their responsibility to make the IP change in some way. But they can have an impact, and that's a kind of key premise that is quite different from the Al-Anon program. And one of the reasons to kind of seek out family members for this is that they're quite distressed. They need support, but also that IPs are frequently citing family relationships and family involvement as the reason that they are seeking treatment, especially in rehabs when research kind of looks at why it is that they state that they're coming to treatment. So, you know, the thing about Al-Anon that is often frustrating for a CSO is that they will go because they're trying to get their loved one into treatment. They're trying to get this IP into treatment, and that's really not the goal of the Anon programs. And so there's sort of this butting heads about what the objectives are. In CRAFT, again, comparing CRAFT to the Al-Anon programs, the CSOs are focusing on self-care, but they're also focusing on behavioral skills and interpersonal relationship skills that can influence change. So that's a contrast there. But the CSOs really do want help. So I hear a lot of CSOs come to me with a lot of feeling validated by the Anon programs and feeling like it's a great support and they feel a lot of nurturing there, but also frustration that they don't know what to do. What am I supposed to do when he comes home drunk? What am I supposed to do to try and manage this situation? How am I supposed to interact with him? Do I yell? Do I scream? Do I set limits? Do I remove myself? Do I engage with him? And there isn't sort of direct advice on purpose. It's not a mistake. That's what they're designed to do in terms of Al-Anon. So, but that's the difference there. In terms of the Johnson, I'm going to sort of pause in a minute after we get through these to see what people's thoughts are. But in terms of the Johnson Institute intervention, you know, of these three options that CSOs really have in our society for managing a situation like this, this is the sort of one that people know a lot about. It's really recognizing the powerful influence of the family by trying to get them together to convey a message of seriousness about the problem behaviors and get them to agree to rehab. And the key premise here is that direct specific feedback in a confrontational way is going to instigate change. And unfortunately, we don't have like a lot of information about the success rates, but of the research there is, it's a really pretty high success rate. It's pretty costly. There's a lot of media support. A lot of people understand what an intervention is. A lot of people think that is the way that people get change, movement in a change direction. But when you look at sort of what happens logistically when people actually go and try and do an intervention, a big problem is that the vast majority of people fail to go through with the process. And that's, so maybe it works for the people that are doing it, but it's many, many, many people will not do it. And confrontation, I'm going to come back to this idea, but confrontation really has some long-term negative outcomes in the family relationships and in terms of clinical contact. So we're going to return to that idea, though. When you look at CRAFT and compare and like what are the actual objectives of CRAFT, that piece about having an impact, the CSO having an impact on the IP's behavior is really front and center. So the goals and objectives of CRAFT are to reduce the IP's substance use or the negative behaviors and engage them into treatment and increase the life satisfaction of the CSO. So there's some overlap in terms of the objectives of these different approaches, but the key premise for CRAFT is that the IP's motivation is influenceable by the CSO and that positive reinforcement is more effective than confrontation. So that's really the key premise out of which all of the CRAFT strategies are built. So I'm going to go into the engagement rates and comparing these things in terms of the stats and the outcomes, but any questions or feedback, discussion points so far and kind of looking what the available options are for CSOs?
Yeah, this is Steve, and I have a question about the data that you showed for the Johnson Institute outcome.
Yeah.
Is the 90% something that came out of an empirical study?
So there has been some research, and it's really hard to sort of assess because what do you do with the fact that so few people agree to follow through with the treatment approach? And how do you include that information in your assessment of how well this is doing? That's one problem. The other problem in terms of the sorry, my buzzer is inexplicably going off. The other problem is that the objective of a rehab, of an intervention, is often specifically rehab or bust, and so there's not a lot of variety in terms of what is considered success. So if you consider success any engagement at all, there are a couple of studies that show up to 90% if you follow through with the intervention completely and if you agree that a variety of different outcomes are considered engagement, as opposed to what other research shows is that they're trying to get the person into rehab or that's not considered successful. So there is some research on that, but there are all these weird caveats that make it difficult to sort of make sense of that.
Thanks.
Hi, this is Mark. I have a question. Is there any research on why people don't follow through on the Johnson interventions?
I mean, I can only speak to that, in terms of what people say, and there is some descriptive, but there isn't a lot of concrete research around it. What people say in terms of what I've heard and some of the anecdotal things that are written up in the literature is that it feels too scary. It feels like it's going to push the person away. They feel like they've already communicated some of their concerns or all of them and that this is just going to push the IP underground. And in fact, you know, when interventions have been successful, the other side of things is that a lot of these relationships do take a really long time to recover, and the IP does sometimes lose time in their rehab setting or in their treatment engagement because they're so upset about the way in which they've gotten into treatment. So that's sort of a downside of the intervention, and, you know, but to answer your question directly, like, there isn't a lot of research that tells us exactly why that's the case.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Diane. I was trained in the Johnson intervention method, I hate to say when, in 1986. 87, something like that, a long time ago, and have done quite a few interventions in my career, and my personal thought is the way it was originally, how I was originally trained was entirely too confrontational.
Yeah.
And over the years, there are other methods of intervention that are used that involve the family more, that are more like the CRAFT model in that they, if a person refuses to go to treatment, the family remains in a therapeutic setting.
Mm-hmm.
I've been dealing with this situation for a long, long time, and have changed considerably over the years. And I get my, it's my opinion, but confrontation, if you don't do, therefore we will do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Most families won't follow through with that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So the addicts just, or the whatever is out there just going, well, this is what's always happened before, so I can just go out
right.
and do it again, and I can come back and live at home and all that stuff. So
right.
That I find that confrontation worthless in
yeah.
the end.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm
well,
not
I mean,
particularly thrilled with treatment today anyway, how it is.
Yeah, I mean, when confrontation is such a cornerstone of the treatment approach for CSOs or IPs, there's a lot of fallout and consequences. And especially, I think that part of the reason that the CRAFT approach is so appealing to me is that you're really teaching CSOs how to assess themselves and their own abilities to follow through in a more realistic way. And that impacts the relationship in the longer run, so that if consequences need to be happening in a relationship, in a family, you're choosing consequences you can actually follow through on and that you feel are, you know, consonant with the behavior rather than sort of leaping out ahead of where the CSO is really able to follow through with, which undermines their credibility and just continues a pattern of yelling and avoiding and, you know, it sort of feeds into that. So I appreciate that comment. And I think you're right, absolutely. As I said, the in terms of the intervention, the way that it was initially developed and the way that it's sort of evolved over time, it really depends on the interventionist at this moment in time, because some people are trained in more of an arise method, which is a different kind of intervention. And that is a more staged process rather than sort of a one-time event. So I'm going to move on, if that's okay. So in terms of what we see with CRAFT and what the outcomes are, we get a pretty good rate of engagement, treatment engagement for the IP, which is ranges, you know, 65% to 70%. Unfortunately, there aren't very many people who do CRAFT, and so this is really coming out of research and not as much a clinical reality in our environment. But if you look at the graph around, you know, what if you do a horse race of our gold standard, you know, random assignment, and you send people randomly to either do Al-Anon, or a Johnson Institute intervention, or CRAFT, it's pretty clear who's winning here, which is that CRAFT gets people into treatment, gets the IP into treatment. Now, this is not looking at who feels better after this. Al-Anon does a really good job of helping people feel better and attend to their own self-care, and so does CRAFT. But in terms of what a CSO is really looking for, which is to get the IP into treatment, CRAFT does a better job. And I gave you some references for that, and we'll talk about a little more at the end, more references. But really, like 6 or 7 out of 10 cases are getting their IP into treatment, and that's typically within about they actually usually get their IP into treatment before the end of the sort of CRAFT protocol, which is 10 to 12 sessions, but usually it's by the 5th or 6th sessions the IP gets into treatment. And remember, these are people that are have already said that they're not going to be in treatment. They are clearly resistant to the idea of getting into treatment. And it's not a sort of, I often hear people saying, well, this sounds great, but it must be for really mild situations. And not by the research. You know, the research is really looking at people who have significant problems. They've incurred significant consequences from their substance use. They've become qualified for substance dependence. So this is a population of folks that's pretty wide-ranging. And in terms of the type of CSO we're talking about, it is, you know, either a parent, typically, usually a mom, or a wife, sometimes a husband, sometimes a dad, but more frequently it's the woman CSO who gets involved. So in terms of, like, what our historical bias is, you know, I think it goes against using the strategies that Kraft employs, which is, you know, we have this idea in our culture that we have to use tough love, that the CSO can't do anything. I mean, this is what CSOs hear left and right all the time. You know, well, you can't do anything about it. You can't change him. You have to wait until he bottoms out. You know, just try not to enable him. You know, you still being in a relationship with him shows me that you're enmeshed and codependent. And there's a lot of really negative messages that CSOs get about simply being in a relationship, not to mention, you know, trying to be helpful to the IP. And as a result of these messages, and I think it's pretty, you know, universal and infiltrating a lot of different aspects of our culture, people do a lot of things that are not helpful. They nag, they plead, they yell, they lecture, they, you know, they're either on one end of the controlling spectrum or the other, you know, trying to do an intervention and being controlling and confrontational, or doing nothing at all and trying to disengage completely. So I think this reflects some mistaken ideas about how motivation works. You know, I think we have this idea that motivation is going to hit you in a moment, and then if something really gets through to you, I hear parents all the time saying, well, what do I tell him to just have him understand that, you know, smoking pot's a bad idea? Well, it's not going to be the one thing that you tell them, but this is understandable strategy if you think that you just need to get through to the IP and in this moment of understanding they will make a big change and then that will be sustaining from there on after. And this idea that, you know, confronting problems confronting someone about the problems is going to help them change, and until someone sort of reaches that moment of motivation, there's nothing that the CSO can do. But what we know about motivation, and there's a lot of evidence about this now, is that confrontation really negatively affects motivation. And motivation for a particular behavior is different from motivation for another behavior, and that it's a fluctuating state, and it can be facilitated by interpersonal interaction. So relationships really impact what our habits are and what our motivation is. And we are much more likely to make changes in our behaviors and in our habits if we see that there are more costs to continuing it than there are benefits of continuing it. And thinking about it in that way really lends itself to the strategies of Kraft, namely using positive reinforcement, figuring out how to communicate in a way that makes people less defensive, joining with them about things that they are identifying, the IP is identifying as problematic for them, and allowing for negative consequences. So the CSO is really taught skills in multiple areas that they can use in multiple areas of their life. Communication is effective and helpful for many different areas of a person's life. So learning these strategies can be helpful in improving their self-worth and their feelings, all these sort of negative psychological symptoms that can be present for CSOs in general, they can be ameliorated with some of these strategies, even if it's not directly about the IP. And really, CRAFT in general is just focusing in a much more collaborative, motivational way. So as a therapist, we're really talking about how is it that we can model some motivation and collaboration and noticing when the CSO comes in to our office and is really trying something different and is taking risks in how they're communicating or how they're thinking about the problem in a different way, and noticing it and commenting on it and praising it. And that's a modeling technique that is really showing the CSO, like, this is how this feels when you are acknowledged for your positive behaviors, which is what we're wanting them to do with their IP. So the kind of crucial distinction in CRAFT that is really important is to distinguish this idea of positive reinforcement from enabling, namely that we're helping someone with CRAFT to identify those non-drinking, non-drug-using, pro-social behaviors that ideally are replacing the negative behaviors, and we're focusing on how can the CSO positively reinforce those positive behaviors, which is not the same as enabling. And I think in our culture in general, any kind of helping behavior or affirmative behavior in a relationship can sometimes get lumped in together with this idea of enabling, which is a very different thing from positive reinforcement. Enabling is when the CSO is doing something that increases the chances that drug and alcohol use is going to happen or continue. So that differentiation is something that I'm often talking with CSOs about very directly, because that helps them sort of buy in and understand and validate themselves when they're doing something that could have a positive impact, as opposed to doing things that are more likely to continue the negative patterns and support the behavior that they're really looking to change. So do people have any questions about that? Because I think that's kind of a crucial element that sometimes therapists and CSOs alike can get stuck with.
Nicole,
yes. This is Catherine, and my question is, a lot of families that I see are really deficient in the kind of communication skills in terms of just basic ability to phrase things in ways that are not going to elicit defensive response, and they really need to learn how to listen and be present in the moment better, and to not let their anxiety skyrocket and therefore drive a lot of unhelpful behaviors. And so I wonder if that is also part of what you do.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, basically you're talking about how to teach people communication skills, but also teach them self-regulation so they're able to use those skills appropriately.
Exactly, and I spend a lot of time with people on that.
It's very challenging because CSOs understandably have a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear, anger, hurt, guilt, a lot of really negative feelings that get in the way of being able to enact a plan around how they're communicating, much less how their behavior. And I think it's a really good point, because oftentimes when people are talking about communication training, you know, it can feel very simplistic or like, yeah, I get it. I'm supposed to say what I want and not say what I don't want. You know, I want to focus on the positive things that I want to see more of. Yeah, I get that. But in the moment, how is it that you're going to follow through with that plan when all your mind is doing is panicking about, but what if this that and the other thing happens, or, you know, if they are going to do that tonight, or what if he says this? And that's where role modeling and role playing can really come in handy with, as a therapist working with a CSO around these things, because you want to anticipate with them, okay, so this sounds like a great plan. We've used all these communication steps, and I'll kind of refer to some of them that we use, like handouts, and give them little strategies and little diagrams about how they can think about using these strategies with the particular communication they want to do with their loved one. But once you get all that down, then before they walk out of your office, you want to walk through, okay, so what do you think might get in the way? Like, what happens if you're really angry? What if he says this one thing that I know pushes your buttons? Or let's role play this together and see how I'll be you and you be your IP and tell me what you think they might say that could derail you. How could this plan go awry? And let's anticipate that. So using those kind of CBT strategies to help people anticipate what might get in the way then allows you a pathway to be thinking about how are they going to self-regulate, how are they going to manage their feelings, and how are they going to identify what the emotional state is that should indicate that they shouldn't have this conversation, actually, that you know, they're in a place that is not conducive to being able to pull this off, that, you know, they're either, you know, too hurt, or it's a bad time for them, or they're choosing a bad time for their IP. You know, he's sitting there watching that stupid show again. You know, he always does this, and he doesn't listen to me. Well, you know, as terrible as you think the show might be, like, it's clearly something he has a hard time disengaging from, so maybe it's a bad time to choose. I mean, obviously there are a lot of ways that, you know, this gets very complicated, but I think your point about, like, really attending to where they are emotionally and how they're going to take care of those feelings in the context of being able to use these skills is a really important one.
Exactly, and many of the methods that you mentioned are, in fact, very, very helpful. It just sometimes can take a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you. This is fascinating.
Sure. Any other thoughts about that? I'm curious if anybody has any sort of misgivings or problems in trying to communicate with CSOs about the difference between positive reinforcement and enabling, or trying to convey that differentiation or difficulties around that.
This is Bruce. I think that's my main concern. What comes to mind isn't the family that does well. It's the ones that don't do well. And I'm thinking about families where, for example, the spouse has repeated relapses and does a lot of damage during each of the relapses, and the spouse comes to you saying, I've drawn my boundaries, he or she crosses them all the time, and I'm ready to say goodbye, and I want you to help me draw the line and help him understand that the next time is the last time. You know, I just have not been able to convey that to him.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what's been going through my mind this whole time, because I totally believe in craft, but there's always a difficult family or a patient or a client who doesn't really respond well to any intervention. So that's my question.
So to me, you know, as an example, you know, one of the things that Bob says in his training sometimes is that one of his most successful craft cases was a woman who was in a relationship with a man who drank too much, and she did craft, learned how to take care of herself better and communicate better, et cetera. And in the end, they got divorced, and she opened her own restaurant and lived happily ever after. So the point in that example really is that you know, if a person has, I mean, I think this is especially true for parents, but often for spouses as well, that they want to feel like they've done everything they can do to make this relationship work, and that they've tried as many strategies as possible, and they've really given it their all. And in that context, there is an end point to that. There's, I've done this, I've done that, I've tried to manage my feelings differently, I've tried to communicate differently, and there really seems to be no impact. I'm allowing consequences to occur, I've gone about this in a stepwise manner, and I'm really done with this relationship. I need them to move out, or I need to get a divorce, or I need to take that next step. The problem is that people are often in a fit of rage or understandable hurt and anger that they will say things like that, but then they don't follow through because they're actually not, in fact, ready for that. And so I think part of the issue is really, if from a CBT perspective, like just choosing goals that you're able and willing at this moment to follow through on. And helping people to not make threats that they're not actually ready to follow through on. There's nothing anti-craft about reaching the end of your rope and making the decision to end a relationship or have somebody not live with you anymore. It's not against the rules of craft. It's just a matter of helping CSOs to identify what goals they can follow through with, and are they taking care of themselves in the process, and not stepping too far ahead of themselves in what the goal is and what the limits are that they're setting. Does that make sense? Or?
Oh, that's terrific. And to what extent do you find yourself in craft doing 100% traditional family interventions, like tell him back what you're hearing him say, tell her back what you're hearing her say? How do you think she feels about that? When she does this and you do that, what do you think she's trying to convey, and what's the impact of your response? I mean, all the family stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly comes up. I mean, what I end up doing at CMC is more of that, because I have the liberty of being able to see people longer than they do in clinical trials. You know, I don't have to kind of constrict myself to 10 sessions, you know, or 12 sessions. So it does expand more into that, and couples issues actually come up a lot as well, because there is, if I have two parents in the room with me and they are really on different sides of the issue and approaching it differently and think differently about it, then, you know, when does craft become couples therapy is something that we're often discussing, because those issues will interfere with somebody being able to learn skills or be able to practice communication strategies or be able to follow through with a reinforcement plan, et cetera. So, I mean, one thing that I really try and sort of lean against the wind of is that I am a therapist. I do family therapy. I do, you know, traditional CBT work and therapy, psychotherapy. And so I can lean into that. And craft is really more structured than that. And so I really do want my CSOs walking out the door with a strategy that they're working on, with a skill that they're practicing. And that's I'm not saying that's antithetical to family therapy, but I just want to emphasize that, because there is a difference with craft in the sense that we do want to teach them skills. We do want them to experience trying new things, trying to do things differently, trying speaking in different ways, et cetera, and help them have a sense of, like, I learned this skill. I'm practicing this strategy. I'm trying to phrase things in a different way. I'm learning how to, you know, express my feelings using I statements, et cetera, which is, again, none of this is like rocket science that therapists have never heard about. It's just organized in a certain way in terms of how to have an impact on a particular person's behaviors. I'm sorry, I'm talking way too much because we're at like at 147 here. But does that, I'll just check back with you, like, does that make sense?
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's terrifically helpful.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
All right, so.
And this is Ann.
Okay, go ahead.
I certainly hear underneath all of the approach that you're hoping that the concerned significant other can have a little bit of openness to outcome for the other, but that you're building up a quality of life for that person that allows them to, you know, create consequences that are natural because other things are going on for them rather than over-focusing on the identified patient. And, yeah, so that's a very important intervention to maybe give up having to have a certain outcome.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we use just as a concrete strategy is something called the happiness scale, which is just a silly little thing you can find in one of Bob's books that identifies, like, how do you feel on 1 to 10 about all these different aspects of your life, about your communication, about your sex life, about your exercise, about your family relationships outside of this IP, about your work, your mental health, et cetera, like really walking through a ton of different areas of their life. And that in and of itself I always find fascinating because it really helps the CSO to think about the rest of their life, that it actually exists and that we can actually set some goals around those things getting better. And by paying attention to those other areas of their life, they're kind of changing their energy around what matters and reminding themselves that these other relationships matter too, and they're actually doing a good job with their work, or it's actually suffering because of this, and so let's put some energy into that. So it's sort of like an intervention in and of itself to ask people about these other areas of their life. So let me sort of zoom ahead a little bit. You guys have the PowerPoint, so you know, you can look through over what we mean by natural consequences and communicating in positive ways. And there are, you know,
excuse me, I don't have the PowerPoint.
Okay.
How yeah, and I don't either.
Hi.
Access.
If you send me an email at mshanker@navpoint.com, I will send you the slides. It's a little too late for now, but I sent them out yesterday. I'm sorry if I missed anyone.
Okay. Thank you.
So when you get the slides, you'll be able to see that there's a few different slides in the different areas that we would cover in CRAFT with a CSO in session, namely kind of giving a rationale for them around why to use positive communication, what is a natural consequence, how would you go about allowing a consequence like not reheating dinner for somebody comes home drunk or not calling and making excuses for people, et cetera, allowing consequences to occur to their IP to impact that person's motivation. So,
could you say what FA stands for, please, on the slide allowing for natural consequences? You have in parentheses consequences after it.
So this is something that I will go into when I have more time about CRAFT, which is a functional analysis.
Okay.
So a functional analysis is kind of, Bob calls it the roadmap for a CSO to really think about when do they drink, where do they drink, with whom, how much, what do we think the IP is thinking about beforehand, what do we think he or she gets out of the drinking, like what are the positive benefits, what do we think the IP thinks is the downside of it. So it's just a graph, a functional analysis of the drinking or drug use behavior, and that is kind of a roadmap because it identifies things that the CSO might be doing that they could do differently that might impact the situation differently. And it also helps give the CSO a sense of empathy for what's going on and a sense of sort of stability of patterns, because it tends to be that there is a stability of patterns, even though the CSO may come in and say, I have no idea why he's doing what he's doing. It's pandemonium, it's chaos, and that may feel like the case, and it may actually be the case, but it's usually a chaotic situation that one could predict if you walked through it. And that sense of prediction helps have some sense of like, okay, this isn't sort of random. I can tell what's happening here, and some sense of rationale about what's happening, and rationale around why and how I could intervene differently as a CSO. So that's also in Bob's book. So the piece that I'll just jump over to is the CSO's quality of life, which we've focused a little bit on with that question earlier. But I think it's important with the CSO in particular to be identifying ways of combating the isolation, because, you know, especially with parents, they've spent their entire life as a parent reaching out to each other, reaching out to the pediatrician, talking to the teacher, asking their neighbor, talking to their family members, how did you do this? How do we go about this? There are books you follow, like how do we, you know, get them to do this behavior or that behavior, or help them in all these different ways. And suddenly with substance abuse, there's shame, there's isolation, there's guilt, and parents suddenly feel like, I can't ask anybody about this. This is too embarrassing. Or, you know, this shows me up as a terrible parent. Or my kid will be ostracized if everybody knows what's going on. And so that isolation, even though it feels specific around the substance use when it's sort of taking hold as a habit, becomes universal. And they're not talking to people in general. And they're hunkering down. And that has real stress ramifications that really impact a person's mental health in general. So I always try and find ways of getting them, a CSO, to have a goal around that in particular, so that they have some sense of like how they can be reaching out to other people and developing other relationships and not feel quite so alone, even if it's not specifically like an Al-Anon or specifically around how to get support around these issues. So,
excuse me, Mark Finker. Listen, we've got 5 minutes left. I'm capable to run over, but I don't want to impose on your time.
I actually have a patient at 2, so okay. I will have to stop. But let me just jump to, there we go. I'll just jump to the resources then, because I want to make sure everybody knows about them. So Bob has written a book that's called Get Your Loved One Sober. It's a really small, I call it the green book. It's the really small, readable version that you would give to a CSO. And it's very easy to read. It's not complex. It has little strategies and exercises to do. And it's specifically written at a lower education level so that it's very accessible to people. And that's, I think a lot of people really like that book. So that's one thing you can offer your CSOs. As a therapist, the book that he wrote with Jane Smith is Motivating Substance Users to Enter Treatment, Working with Family Members. This is at the end of the PowerPoint, if you have it. We wrote Beyond Addiction, my colleagues and I, because we found that a lot of people were wanting more information or more resources to help them understand motivation in general and what is a substance use problem, how do we define that, how do I think about treatment, how do I think about being involved in my loved one's treatment. And so the sort of central part of our book in the middle is all about craft. But what surrounds that before and after is thinking about motivation and treatment. So that's another resource for CSOs. And then we wrote the 20-Minute Guide for Parents and the 20-Minute Guide for Partners, which is more of a kind of a workbook. And we use those in the partnership collaboration we have with the Partnership for Drug-Free Kids in training parents who are willing to be coaches for call-in parents worried about their kids' substance use. So it's a peer-to-peer network, and that's another resource that you can send CSOs to, that they go to the Partnership for Drug-Free Kids website, and you can call in and ask for a parent coach to give you these free, I think they go up to 5 or 6 conversations with another parent who's been in their shoes and has been trained by us in this approach. So we use the 20-minute guide in sort of structuring that support that they give to other parents. So that's another resource that I wanted you to be aware of. So the 20-minute guide is also online and completely available for free that way if people want to access that. So we're at the end here. So Mark,
First of all, thank you so much. This was really helpful, and it really helped me understand the craft approach a little better. I hope if people have questions, they feel free to contact you.
Hey, Mark.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Mark. I don't get to do as many fun things as president of the division as I'd like to. It would be very much fun to compliment you and say, that was a terrific presentation. And on behalf of the entire division, I want to thank you. This will be on, it is recorded and it will be available as a podcast for a long time. And I think people will find it extremely helpful. So again, on behalf of the whole division, thank you for this excellent resource. And Mark,
I agree.
Thank you
very much. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for everybody for calling in, and have a great summer, and we'll see you in September.
Mark, thank you again.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Thanks again, Nicole.
Mark, we'll be in touch, and I'll connect you with Gabby.
That would be so great. Thank you.
Mark.
Take care. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Mark?
Okay, Mark, are you still there?
Well, hold on one second.
Okay.